Welcome to the Halloween edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on your local campus and community radio station, KDVS Davis. This is Dr. Andy. I'm very pleased that you joined me today on the 28th of October as we lead into our ninth Halloween show on this particular radio program. I still have the playlist on my computer from many Halloweens ago, and I'll be sharing with you some of that spooky music. We may even hear from Christopher Walken as he presents to us The Raven. But first, we're going to hear from Sarah Peralt. She's a new faculty member at the University of California at Davis. She teaches for the University Writing Program. We're going to talk to her a little bit about the path that she took to come to UC Davis. And then in the second half hour of the program, we will hear from Eve West Bessier, Davis's favorite jazz poet. So stick around. Perhaps you'll have something to add, maybe a spooky story to share at 5 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon. Why not? For your listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. My name is Dr. Andy. I'll be your host for the coming hour of spooky programming, poetic representations of fear, technological headaches that make you pull your hair out. I don't even know if we're going to get to any of those, but it sounds good, doesn't it? We will touch upon technological and poetic issues that are, in one way or another, frightening. Far less frightening, however, is my first guest, Sarah Peralt. She's a new faculty member at the University of California at Davis. She's one of my colleagues in the University Writing Program, and she's been teaching her first UC Davis classes. I asked her to stop by to introduce herself to all of you, and so I could find out about her in this public forum. Sarah Peralt, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here. So you were born in Massachusetts.
Yes.
Yet we're both here in Davis. I was born in Washington, D.C. I spent 4 years in Massachusetts, and yet we find ourselves in 14 Lower Freeborn. Tell me a little bit about how it was that you came to Davis.
Well, I most recently came from Nevada,
yeah.
Where I did my doctoral work in rhetoric and composition. And before that, I spent 3 years in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, on the south shore of Lake Superior, way up there in the north, where it's very, very cold.
Yeah.
And what people do for most of the year is either drink or write. And I was there to write, so I wrote. And
what did you write when you were up there?
I was doing a Master of Fine Arts in nonfiction creative writing.
Good for you.
And I wrote mostly about natural history and science topics.
So did you bring copies of Annie Dillard books with you up to the great white north of the Upper Peninsula?
I did.
Yeah. And was she helpful to you? Was she daunting? What did you think of Annie Dillard as you were doing that sort of creative nonfiction work?
Well, I thought that Pilgrim at Tinker Creek was fantastic for its time.
Mm-hmm.
It now strikes me as a bit overwritten, although, again, when it was published, probably it wasn't, given the stylistic tendencies of the time
right.
in writing. I felt like I was reading It was like a necklace with lots of fairly ordinary kind of pretty beads and then the occasional just absolutely stunning gem.
Right.
That would keep me going through the next string of beads.
Until you got to another gem.
Until I got to another brilliant gem.
Yeah. Let's remind folks that we're talking about the American essayist and novelist Annie Dillard, most famous for her book Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. Some people have compared her to Thoreau and placed her in the long tradition of American nature writers or essayists who focus on the natural world. So you spent those 3 years on the Upper Peninsula, and then?
And then I moved to Reno, Nevada mm-hmm. for a PhD in rhetoric and composition.
Good for you.
And spent 5 years there.
And then you came to Davis. Which of these moves caused the greatest amount of culture shock for you?
Oh, that's a hard question. Oregon to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I moved to Oregon to go to college and stayed for 15 years. That was enormous.
Yeah.
That was just stunning culture shock. I haven't been here long enough yet to know just how big a transition I've begun.
Right.
I will say that I am in a state of landscape shock.
Yeah. Because it's so flat here.
It's the flat is part of it, and I've spent many years in places where the shape of the land shows, where there are mountains or exposed rock, and I think even a hilly country that was all green would be a little unsettling. I'm used right. to being able to see the framework, the skeleton, the rock.
So what would be an example of that from a place that you've lived? I'm the same way. I remember and wrote recently about how much I enjoyed climbing on rocks and kind of rocky hills that would last a great deal because D.C. is a very hilly place.
Mm-hmm.
And how I think unless you go into the Sierras, the closest place we have like that would be Indian Rock in North Berkeley, which is about, you know, 60 miles from this studio. And that seemed very strange to me when I first moved to Davis.
Mm-hmm. Well, and moving down from Reno, of course, I was right on the east flank of the Sierras
right.
at the edge of the basin and range. So you can't turn around without tripping over a mountain range.
Absolutely. And so were you a hiker when you lived in the Reno area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been hiking and backpacking for 20 years.
Yeah.
Oregon, Michigan, Nevada.
And so here one walks rather than hikes, really. And I'm wondering, what about the natural phenomena that you've encountered inside the Davis City limits? What are your thoughts on that?
The natural phenomena in the sense of the wildlife?
Yeah, the wildlife, or maybe you might think of North Star Park or walking along Poudre Creek or mm-hmm. any of these places that you might have seen on a walk or on a bike ride.
Yeah, I have enjoyed walking around some of those areas and finding mm-hmm. the various green spaces. I also really like how the wildlife is just in the town.
Right.
So I was having dinner at Bistro 33
mm-hmm.
This summer, and an owl flew overhead.
Yeah.
And so I asked one of the people waiting tables there, wait a minute, there's an owl living in this tree, and it turns out that there are nest boxes all over Davis with barn owls. I think they're barn owls. They're the ones that tolerate humans.
Right.
Living in them, and that it's a rodent control measure. I've recently found one that lives in the tree hanging over my apartment.
How great.
And I love it. Yeah.
And so just think of all the rodents you don't have to encounter now because you get to see an occasional barn owl.
Yes. Another bonus.
Absolutely. Sarah Peralt is my guest here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're talking, it seems, neither about poetry nor technology, but about the natural world and first impressions of living in the city of Davis. Sarah Peralt is a new faculty member teaching for the University Writing Program at University of California at Davis. Well, Sarah, we're just about out of your allotted time. I wanted to ask you if you have any reflections or thoughts on anything spooky, Halloweenish, poetic, or technological And I'll let you choose from that menu of options.
Spooky, Halloweenish, technological.
Or poetic.
Or poetic. I will make a poetic observation.
Excellent.
That it is time for a revival of Ogden Nash.
You think so?
I think so.
Well, I've got some Ogden Nash here on my computer, I believe. So let's see if we can share something with people at home who may not know Ogden Nash. And really, with these youngsters today, too few of them do. Do you agree?
I agree.
All right.
Why we need a revival.
Excellent. So let's now hear something by Ogden Nash. And this is called I Must Tell You About My Novel. And as they say in the industry, Sarah Perrault.
I must tell you about my novel.
Wait a minute, Ogden. As they say in the industry, Sarah Perrault, I'll thank you now and let you take your answer off the air. All right. Sarah Perrault, thanks very much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And now, because I have this on my computer rather than on CD, I'm just going to hold my computer up to the microphone while we all listen to the somewhat distant voice of Ogden Nash here on the Halloween edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Ogden Nash.
I must tell you about my novel. My grandpa wasn't Salty. No hero he of fable. His English wasn't faulty. He wore a coat at table. His character lacked the color of either saint or satyr. His life was rather duller than that of Walter Pater. Look at Grandpa, take a look. How can I write a book? His temper wasn't crusty. He shone not forth majestic for barroom exploits lusty or tyranny domestic. He swung not on the gallows, but went to his salvation while toasting stale marshmallows, his only dissipation. Look at Grandpa, take a look. How can I write a book? My Uncle John was cautious. He never slipped his anchor. His probity was nauseous. In fact, he was a banker. He hubbed no hubba-hubbas and buckled he no swashes. He wore a pair of rubbers inside of his galoshes. Look at my uncle, take a look. How can I write a book? My other uncle, Herbie, just once enlarged his orbit, the day he crushed his derby while cheering James J. Corbett. No toper he or wencher, he backed nor horse nor houri. His raciest adventure summons to the jury. Look at my uncles, take a look. How can I write a book? Round my ancestral menfolk there hangs no spicy aura. I have no racy kinfolk from Rome or Glaucomora. Not nitwits, not Napoleons, the mill they were the run of. My family weren't Mongolians, then whom can I make fun of? Look, no book.
are listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. I'd like to remind you that Eve West Bessier will be joining us in the second half of the program of this, our Halloween special. Perhaps a little bit less especially Halloween-y than in the past, for we're a few days until Saturday night. But I have some sounds and some poems to share with you that may begin to put you in the mood. Bach knew Halloween. Ah, Bach. Here's a little tune that whenever my wife hears it, she says, "Hey, what's with the haunted chicken music?" I thought it would be perfect to play in the background while I read you a few of Walt Whitman's spookier poems. For instance, here's a poem written in 1868 called Whispers of Heavenly Death. Whispers of heavenly death murmured I hear, labial gossip of night, sibilant chorals, footsteps gently ascending, mystical breezes wafted slow and low, ripple of unseen rivers, tides of a current flowing, flowing, flowing. Or is it the plashing of tears, the measureless waters of human tears? I see, just see, skyward, great cloud masses, mournfully, slowly they roll, silently swelling and mixing, with at times a half-dimmed, saddened, far-off star appearing and disappearing. Some parturition, rather, some solemn immortal birth on the frontiers to eyes impenetrable. Some soul is passing over. And now another Walt Whitman poem. On this, our Halloween special edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, we all know well haunted houses. There is a haunted house in South Davis on El Pescador Court that is well known for scaring children of all ages every October 31st. If you find El Pescador this coming Saturday night, you'll find the haunted house, if you dare. Here's a poem by Walt Whitman about a haunted ship called The Dismantled Ship. It's one of the last poems that Walt Whitman ever wrote. The Dismantled Ship. In some unused lagoon, some nameless bay, on sluggish, lonesome waters, anchored near the shore, an old, dismasted, gray, and battered ship, disabled, done, after free voyages to all the seas of earth, hauled up at last and hawsered tight, lies rusting, moldering. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. It is now time to hear a word from our sponsor. Happy Halloween.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, the Halloween special. And now, let's turn to Emily Dickinson. Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. We slowly drove, he knew no haste, and I had put away my labor and my leisure too for his civility. We passed the school where children strove at recess in the ring. We passed the fields of gazing grain, we passed the setting sun, or rather, he passed us. The dews grew quivering and chill, for only gossamer, my ground, my tippet, only tool. We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground. The roof was scarcely visible, the cornice in the ground. Since then, 'tis centuries, and yet feels shorter than the day I first surmised the horses' heads were toward eternity.
Unnoticed, a leaking water heater can spell disaster for a homeowner. Fortunately, there is a valve that can be installed that will sense when water is accumulating in a drip pan below the water heater. The device is said to be able to shut off both water and gas feeds in the event of a water leak. It can be used on a new water heater or an existing one. To learn more, ask your plumber or call 1-877-GET-WAGS. That's 1-877-GET-WAGS.
This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, thanking you for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station here on the Halloween edition of this particular radio show. We'll be joined in the second half hour by Eve West Bessier, the great Davis jazz poet. It's a long-standing tradition on this show to read Poe's most famous poem, that is, Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. In the past, I've had Christopher Walken share that poem. And if I'm not mistaken, I have Christopher Walken here, ready and willing to read to you, with sound effects, The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. You might know that The Raven is a narrative poem, first published in 1845. Its language is stylized, its atmosphere is supernatural. It discusses a man's slow descent into madness due to loss of his love, Lenore. I remember that Poe once said that he wrote the poem logically and methodically, unlike the mindset of the narrator. He wanted to appeal to popular tastes and to critical ones. I think that we should hear now Christopher Walken reading The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
Upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "Only this, nothing more." How distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and brilliant maiden of the angel's name Lenore, nameless here, forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of the purple curtain filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, to some visitor, entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor, entreating entrance at my chamber door, this it is, but nothing more. Presently, my soul grew stronger. Hesitating, then no longer, sir, said I, "Oh, madam, truly, your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is, I was napping. And so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here, I opened wide the door. Darkness there. Nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering. Longer stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before, but silence was unbroken. The stillness gave no token. The only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window, that is. Let me see then what thereat is in this mystery, explore. But my heart is still a moment. This mystery, explore, it is the wind, and nothing more. Open here, I flung the shutter. When, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance, maybe, not a minute stopped or stayed, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat. Nothing more. Then, this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, now I say, I'll sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven. Wandering from the nightly shore, tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though this answer little meaning, little relevancy bore, for we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird upon his chamber door, bird or beast, upon his sculpted bust, upon his chamber door, such a nameless nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the pallid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul, in that one word, he did outpour. Nothing farther than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow, he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then, the bird sang. Startled by the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless said I, what it utters is its only stock in store, caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast until his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope, that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. With a raven, still beguiling my fancy into smiling straight, I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then, upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to winking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant, and croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er she shall press on evermore. Then the thought, the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God at length thee, by these angels he hath sent thee respite, respite and prevent thee from the memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind of lament thee, and forget this lost Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet, still of bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, think of evil, prophet, still of bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden that shall clasp a sainted maiden with the angels named Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden with the angels named Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black gloom as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door, quoth the raven. For more. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of the palace just above my chamber door. To his eyes are all the seeming of a demon's to his dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor, and my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted.
You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Eve West-Bessier is scheduled to be our next guest. I'll try to reach her on the phone. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Of all the poets I run into on the streets of Davis, and there are quite a few, one of my favorites is Eve West-Bessier. She holds a Bachelor of Arts in English from San Francisco State University and a Master's Degree of Education from UC Davis, where she worked as a researcher in educational program development and evaluation for 18 years. She's currently an area coordinator and teacher with California Poets in the Schools. She is a jazz vocalist, a vocal coach, and a certified life coach. Her poems have been widely published, including in journals such as the North American Review, Calliope, Lyric, Manzanita, Seeker, and the Sacramento Anthology, 100 Poems. She has two chapbooks out, Roots Music and Splash, published by D Press, and she's currently seeking publication for her full-length collection of jazz-inspired poetry, called Mood Swing. She received the 2000 Catherine Hollwine Award, took first place for poetry in the 2000 California Focus on Writers Contest, and received second place in the Jack Kerouac Poetry Contest in 2008. One of her jazz poems, and one of my favorites, Zoo You Boogaloo, was nominated for a Pushcart Prize in 2003. I'm very pleased to reintroduce you all to Eve West-Bessier. Welcome back, Eve.
Thank you, Andy. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you here and to hear your unmistakable voice. We've been talking a little bit about Halloween this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. But when I think of your music, I think of kind of upbeat, jazzy, kind of delightfully musical poems rather than the sort of dark, dank, fetid, and depressing poems that one might associate with Halloween. Therefore, it might be an odd choice to have you on the show leading up to October 31st. But I'm so pleased that you could join us and share some of your work.
I might be able to come up with some dark and dank stuff.
Could you? That would be great. Before we get there, though, tell me about what sort of projects you've been working on. I know that your projects are poetic and musical as well as other sorts. And if you have anything coming up that we should make sure to plug.
Oh, okay. Well, I wrote a poem a day in September. Molly Fisk, who is another delightful local poet.
She's great.
Had a little thing, and I noticed on your Facebook that you are challenging us to try this in November if we're not writing novels.
Right. I was debating with one of my friends and former students whether I should write a novel or a poem a day in November. And we decided in the end that I should write a poem a day because that is something I am capable of doing and have a track record of doing in the past. And I know you've done it as well most recently in September. What sort of, just because I threw out the challenge to everyone, I don't know if I'm going to be providing any prompts, but what sort of help, support, or guidance did you get from Molly Fisk?
Well, Molly, what she did is she had everyone who was involved send in two or three prompt ideas, and then she had them on a online classroom site.
I see.
I basically ignored all of those because I decided what I wanted to do was write a chapbook of poems inspired by random choices of three words from the dictionary.
Okay.
So I basically chose three words from the dictionary every day. So the prompt was essentially the same except that the words were different. And the words were very odd juxtapositions to each other, obviously.
And how did you choose the words? Did you open up the dictionary at random and put your finger down?
Yep.
All right.
Three times.
All right, good.
And I'll actually read one of those.
Great. I look forward to hearing that. And so when you came across these words, were there any words where you had to continue reading the dictionary in order to figure out what the word meant?
No, but there were some words that I wasn't so sure I wanted to use.
Right.
Like nymphomaniac was one of them that showed up. I thought that was interesting.
Interesting.
Very, very strange juxtapositions of words. And sometimes I would also go on a word that had multiple meanings, I would also pick the strangest meaning or the least common meaning.
Right.
And then I would put, at the top of the poem, I would actually list the words with their definition. There were a few that were obscure enough that I thought they might be worth having a definition there.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure people at home are curious. Do you have a poem there that you can exemplify this process with?
Sure. Okay, so this one is entitled Oleander, Chimera, Performance Art. And performance art is two words, but it was listed in the dictionary as an entity.
Okay.
So, Oleander, Chimera, Performance Art. I walk through a hedge maze of red oleander. As saturated as the flaming breath of an ancient chimera, I walk on broken roof tiles, red as late lingering sun. I carry a white baptismal candle without flame. Six incandescent dragonflies flit about my head. I pass through a river of marigolds, staining the soles of my bare feet the color of holy robes. In this performance art of living, knowing the steps is of no consequence to the unfamiliar impromptu dance. When I flit out from these robes, I will become a dragonfly with Chimera's breath, burning away the self as an illusion of mind.
Oh, I like that. Especially the sense of the Chimera or Chimera being so such a prominent force or presence in the poem that the self almost disappears.
Ah, very nice.
That's delightful. I'm wondering about the size of these poems that you wrote in September. Were they about the same size? Did you have any very short poems or very long poems? How did that work?
They were all... Well, I ended up making a chapbook, and most of them were short-lined and fit in two pages, and often just a page and a half, but, you know, went on to a second page.
Right.
There was one that was a little bit longer. The line length was longer, and it was half a page. But most of them were on the thin side as far as line length, and so moved pretty quickly. and took up a couple of pages. And that was interesting because they were very similar in that way. And a lot of them were, this is actually a personal collection that I wrote for a friend of mine, so a lot of them were, ended up, this is not my plan, but they ended up being very personal poems. So that was interesting, too.
Tell me more about the chapbook. And before you do, let's remind folks that Eve West Bessier, the great Davis poet and vocalist, is here on the Lifeline, and we're talking about a poem a day project that she completed last month in September. Tell me about the chapbook. Did you know at the start that you would have a chapbook? How did you choose which poems would be included? And what percentage of your 30 days of writing made it into the book?
Well, I did not plan to make a chapbook. I basically just wanted to inspire myself and put some fire under my butt, so to speak, to write some poems. So that was the intent. And fairly quickly, I realized that the poems, and they weren't necessarily thematic, but they were very personal in nature, which is unusual. My poems often, because I write to jazz, my poems often take on a character that is sort of external to myself.
Right.
In fact, the poems often have characters in them that are not me. They're characters, as if they were pieces of fiction. Whereas these poems were very much more, they were more intimate and more internal. The chapbook is about 26 pages, so there's 12 or 13 poems. So I ended up using about half of the poems that I wrote, which is a pretty high percentage of poems, you know, if in a process like that where you're writing every day, because you're basically moving through a lot of chaff.
Absolutely. Well, good for you. I want to hear another poem from this collection, or of your choosing, when we return. But first, we have to play an important message that'll give more of you a chance to go find out what you can about Eve West Bessier, the productive poet, who's joining me here on the live line on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis.
October 17th, 24th, and 31st are Saturday Fright Nights from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Davis Mega Maze, an amazing cornfield maze, one of the largest in California. Get lost.
For more information, visit DavisMegaMaze.com.
If it were easy, everyone would do it. It takes a special person to join the National MS Society's Bike Tours to Fight MS. If you like a challenge and want to have some fun for a good cause, call 1-800-FIGHT-MS.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Speaking of bike challenges, there's a radio show coming up called Time to Get Away with DJ Springy. Goes from 6 until 8 p.m. and DJ Springy is in the house. He looks forward to sharing with you some music. Make sure that you stick around for that. Eve West Bessier is on the live line, and we're talking about some work that she's done recently as a poet. Eve, what's this next poem that you'd like to share with listeners?
This next poem is called Timbal, T-Y-M-B-A-L, which means it's the shrilling organ of a cicada, the part of the cicada that makes the sound, the classic, you know, sound that the cicada. And some people say cicadas, right?
That's what we say back east, but, that's cicada. Just back east.
So timbal was the first word, externalism, and taffeta, which is that swishy, wonderful fabric that a lot of old women's clothing was made out of. We don't see too much taffeta these days. But
that's true, but we're going to hear some now.
We are.
All right.
Okay. Timbal externalism taffeta. To possess a shrilling organ as does a cicada. To sing with sinews ceaselessly. To resonate a plaintive rustling of taffeta against tile, a swish of wishes. As one expressing externalism in fashionable whimsy, the other a vibrating timbal of instinct. A woman in the ballroom, a cicada in the garden.
Nice, I like that.
So I did find that a lot of these poems were very... they had a coolness to them. I mean, and I don't mean that in the hip kind of way.
In the way that you are typically cool.
Yeah. They had a kind of a moonlight coolness. A lot of them were very spare and crystalline, which is interesting. I think potentially because when you juxtapose words without, you know, they're being juxtaposed as the title, I put little hyphens in between them, little, you know, dashes between them. It creates almost like a phraseology without connective tissue.
Right.
There's no, you know, verbs and prepositions and connective tissue. So I think that leads to a very kind of spare style in the poem. I highly recommend this exercise. I'm going to do it again in November.
Excellent. Good. Good for you. Now, did you ever find, as you were writing a poem a day, that... Elizabeth Bishop once said that the best way to revise a poem is to write another poem. And I'm wondering if you ever felt compelled to write a second or third poem after finishing something either that you were pleased with or that you weren't. And did you bank any for future days, like if you knew you had a bunch of gigs on a Saturday?
I did. Yeah, towards the end of the month, I ended up having to write several poems on certain days because I didn't keep up with myself.
Right.
So, you know, and sometimes you know in advance, like you were saying, there's certain days that you are not going to be able to really do it. So I think that's okay. And if it's not, too bad.
Exactly.
Because we're making the rules ourselves here, you know.
Whatever we can do to trick ourselves into being productive, creative people.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we should do.
I'm all for that.
Excellent. All right. And... Eve, anything else coming up in the world of music or poetry that you're going to participate in that you want folks to know about?
Well, I'm actually having a 50th birthday party that's sort of a public thing because it's at the Performer Circle, which is the once a month on the fourth Monday open mic and feature performers experience at Village Homes. It's on November 23rd. I'll be doing some singing, and I might read some poetry as well. And it happens to be my 50th birthday, so if anybody knows me and wants to come out and hang out at Performer Circle that night, it starts at 7:15. There's a sign-up at 6:45 for the open mic portion. And Scarlett Uber, a wonderful Brazilian, originally from Brazil, singer, is going to be performing as a feature performer. So it should be a wonderful night of music and possibly some poetry. And I'm also going to be teaching, I'm currently teaching a writing poetry from visual images workshop at the Art Center. And I will be teaching for their next session, which starts in, I believe, in mid-January, a writing poetry from music or inspired by music workshop on Wednesday evenings, every other Wednesday evening. So
excellent. Well, that makes total sense, and we can find out more about that by heading to the website of the Davis Art Center.
That's right. Their new catalog is in proof right now, so it should be coming out in a few weeks.
Excellent. Well, Eve West-Bessier, it's been a pleasure as always to have you on the radio show, and I look forward to running into you again soon in downtown Davis and seeing you for sure at your 50th birthday party.
Excellent. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Eve. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'd also like to invite all of you to check out a performance, whether musical or poetic, by Eve West-Bessier. The next time you get a chance, her poetry is quite good, quite uplifting, musical, jazzy, and cool, in the jazz sense of that word. A couple events I wanted to mention that are coming up. hosted by the Davis Humanities Institute. If you'd like to find out more about what the Davis Humanities Institute is offering, visit dhi.ucdavis.edu. Tomorrow night, for instance, at the University Club on the UC Davis campus at 4 o'clock, there will be a talk by Catherine Walsh, Thinking With, Intellectual Engagements, Decolonial Entanglements, and Epistemic Interculturality. On Friday, get this, Esther McIntosh will be giving a talk at the University Club, 3:30 to 5, Engaged Scholarship 101, What Happens When the Academic Meets the Public. Well, that's something that I explore every week on this radio show, becoming with each passing year of the show, almost nine of them now, somewhat less academic behind the mic and somewhat more public, and I hope publicly accessible. I'd also like to mention, speaking of publicly accessible culture, that a week from tonight, there will be a poetry reading at Bistro 33's Poetry Night at 9 p.m., starring Ray Garand and Melissa Stein. Ray Garand is a well-known, now Davis-based poet who won the Hopwood Award when she was at the University of Michigan, earning a graduate degree there in creative writing. And Melissa Stein, well, I've known her for 15 years now. She was a graduate student a long time here, earning an MA in creative writing at UC Davis. And now, poems by both Stein and Garand have been chosen to be included in a new anthology of Best American Poetry, edited by Kim Adonizio. So that's a week from tonight, on November 4th, at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. I'd like to thank my guests this afternoon, including Eve West-Bessier, who we just heard from, and Sarah Perrault, one of my new colleagues at the University Writing Program. My name is Dr. Andy. This is KDVS, and I'll see you next week for another edition.